Are you getting messages from your computer asking you to update the operating system? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We'll be talking about updating your Mac or your PC today with one of our regular guests, Peter Green, back with us, computer consultant with Infostar.com. Stops by every other month to help you with your computer-related problems. So, we'll start on updates. Have updates caused problems with your computer? Or maybe you have other tech questions as well. I hope you'll join in our conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Peter Green, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
Well, before we start talking about updates, let's talk about an operating system just to begin. What does an operating system really do?
An operating system talks between the hardware and the software that you want to use. So like an accounting program, word processing, spreadsheet, you know, crunch numbers and things like that, to talk to the hardware and allow an interface or a way to communicate with the things that you physically touch. So like your keyboard, your mouse, the monitor, you know, and then we've talked in the past about problems with like a dual display having an issue because of an operating system update. Well, there was a flaw in the operating system update talking to the hardware. Therefore, the software would not work properly.
And the most popular operating systems, probably three or four, maybe?
Windows and a lot of iterations of Windows. Yeah. You know, there are people still using older versions. And Apple. And then Linux and Ubuntu from Dell is made popular with their hardware. And then you look at the, you know, telephone platform, the smart devices, the tablets, you know, the iOS, which is the Apple operating system, and then Android, which is popular for most of the other phones like Samsung and LG and so forth. And then you've got the tablets.
And the updates essentially fix little flaws that you were talking about.
Well, they fix flaws, but they also take advantage of the new hardware. So, you know, when Apple came out with the Retina display, you know, a big push was the upgrade in the operating system because it took advantage of the hardware. You could have great hardware, but if you don't have the version of the operating system that takes advantage or exploits all the features of it, then you're kind of shortchanging yourself.
And is it a cost thing that companies just issue updates instead of new versions of the operating system?
That's an interesting question. It gives them something to do. There's security issues, and you know, you go back to something that happened last year with the chip flaws having a problem. So there have to be operating system updates as related to that. Rolling out updates, you know, from a technical standpoint can be expensive for the company. They've got to, you know, put resources out there for, you know, getting everybody updated. Then they got to deal with all the fallout and collateral damage of, you know, things that they didn't test and dealing with that. And that's why some of them are really hard to talk to over the phone to get help. Or if you think you're talking to somebody over the phone and getting help, you may question, you know, how much help it really is.
But you need to update, don't you? I mean, if you don't update, what is it happen?
It's really a catch-22 because if you don't update, then you could be susceptible to security issues, especially with those chip flaws. You know, there are these so-called back doors that, you know, can be exposed. And how well exposed they are, you have to keep up to date and do research on that. So I don't like being first in being updated, but with, you know, Windows, they're constantly pushing these updates out, and they use artificial intelligence, and that's something I'd like to talk about, you know.
Well, yeah, Windows 10, I mean, there have been so many problems connected to the updates.
Well, I remember going on vacation last year, and the fall creators update created issues with dual displays being not working, and that's popular where I work. There was another update prior to that that was causing problems with missing window fonts, and so Windows has these fonts that are part of the operating system just so you can see things.
Yeah.
And for some reason was running interference with an accounting application where you can no longer see customer statements. So, you know, where did they go? Well, their update wiped them out. So then you had to apply a fix to that, but then you had to go searching for the fix because they didn't want to admit that there was a problem.
so did they originate with Microsoft, or are they coming from the programs that work with the operating system?
No, they're coming from Microsoft.
They are coming from Microsoft.
You know, so I affectionately, when I message people, I put an M dollar sign because, you know, they're, you know, it's just, it's frustrating because one of the recent updates, which took place in April, and then I believe they applied some kind of fix to it in May, but they were using artificial intelligence to roll out this update. And they said this was like the most successful rollout of an update, you know, across their system with, you know, I think it was like 300 or 400 million PCs being updated by their artificial intelligence controlled system. Yet there, I come to discover, because in my work environment, I had installed an administered version of Avast Internet Security, which is not the free version, okay?
Yeah.
And it didn't matter to me that it was a free version or it was the package that I, you know, downloaded and installed for all my machines. The problem was is that there was a known conflict with the update that Microsoft was pushing out using their artificial intelligence.
But they weren't telling us.
And they weren't telling you that there was a problem. So they kept on pushing the rollout onto all the machines, and I had to manage this chaos because it would try to install. It would never complete, and it was this constant battle.
So, and it wouldn't explain why it wouldn't complete. It just kept saying, no, you got to do this.
Right. And then there were other parts of the problem where they had some network protocol issues, and it caused, all of a sudden on one day, it caused two critical machines to just like not see the network, not want to work, not want to do what needed to be done with these machines, and had to figure out that we had to roll off or uninstall the Avast and then, you know, force updates on it so that it would, you know, take the updates. And it was just this unbelievable battle, and it could have been stopped by someone getting into this artificial intelligence and saying, hey, there are new rules that, you know, if you're pushing out an update to a system that has Avast on it, and they're it's like, how did they not know?
Yeah,
you know. So, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of other people out there that are going, why is my machine not updating? You know, it's just not, you know, it's failing on certain parts, and it's because they're not tuned in to their users, is what the way I feel. Now, Apple, on the other hand, their latest operating system versions, High Sierra, Mojave, the next one, they're all taking advantage of the newer hardware that's out there on your system. They're trying to enhance your usability of the system with file system management, taking advantage of displays, working with pictures and things like that. I think Apple takes it to the next level, you know, for enhancements to the OS, and Windows, because they got some holes in the Swiss cheese with the security. They're a little bit more preoccupied with some of those things. But, Redstone is the next update that are coming out in the fall. I don't want to be the first one to install it because I've had issues with installing some of these updates, and you get gun-shy. You know, you just get really frustrated because it can create a lot of work.
Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. Questions for him. I hope you'll join us at 1-800 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@WPR.org. We're talking about updates, but Pete can take other questions as well. Bill emailed to say that he updated his wife's iPhone recently, and since then they've had to reconnect her phone to her Ford Sync system repeatedly because it keeps kicking her off. They're following the steps correctly. Different people have done the process. What might be going on there?
Well, it could be a problem with the update is related to your particular, you know, hardware combination. So your car, your Ford Sync, your phone, the version of the iOS that you have, your update that you applied, you know, all those things become individualized versus, like, you know, population-based. You have to look at what you have, and then you have to go out there and see, you know, are that maybe you have to uninstall an application and then reinstall it after the update. Sometimes it's how, you know, it's the sequence in which things were done. The best thing is to, you know, if it's dealing with like an automobile, you know, syncing with the Ford product, is maybe contacting Ford and seeing if they're hearing other issues with that, or going online and researching that way. You can also try rolling it back, you know, undoing the update if that's possible, and see how that works, because sometimes that's what I've had to do with desktop systems, is to roll it back to get it to work.
So how do you do that?
Well, in the Windows environment, you have a time limit with their updates. So if you apply an update, you can go into the recovery and you can uninstall the latest update. You have about a 10-day window to do that. You could also create restore points and use those as well. You could always start over again, or you could wait for their fix, but they have to acknowledge that there's a problem. And here's the other caveat about the whole thing. If you don't tell them there's a problem, how do they know there's a problem?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people out there that probably have problems that don't tell them that they have problems. So it's sort of like when we've talked in the past about troubleshooting like an internet connection, okay?
Yeah.
Talking about Charter and Spectrum. I used to be a user on their system. What was the, you know, how did you deal with your system being down? Well, until they heard from three people in your area, they had no knowledge of anybody being down. So you need to call in and say, hey, you know, I'm having a problem. If you sit there and think it's going to fix itself, it may not.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the rule that they used to use. Now, they probably have better monitoring tools that I would hope that they would use to see, you know, what's going on network-wide and monitor, you know, what's on, what's off, you know, and so forth. But it used to be that way, that if you didn't call in, you know, they assumed everything was just fine. And it's the same thing with companies, you know, printers that you buy, a tablet, you know, it applies for anything. If you don't, you know, cars, you know, refrigerators, if you don't tell them you're having a problem, how are you going to get it fixed? How are you going to get their attention?
Yeah. Peter Green, our guest of InfoStar.com. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your personal computer today with Peter Green of InfoStar.com. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. Questions for Peter, even if it's not relating to OS updates, that's fine. If you got another computer question, we'd love to hear from you. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@WPR.org. And let's turn to Fred in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hi, Fred.
Good morning. Always a great show, always challenging with computers, so yeah. It's certainly timely. I'm probably like 95% of your callers that have a drawer full of VHS cassette tapes, And I've been looking at trying to copy those onto DVD, but just kind of unclear, you know, how good the software is to do that, or do I need a recording machine to be able to do that? And then the other question is, we have a bunch of the smaller camera cassettes, you know, with things on them, but we don't have the camera anymore. And is there a way to copy those smaller camera cassettes to DVD?
So when you say the smaller camera cassettes, are you referring to, you know, motion video or picture?
Yeah, probably the motion video cassettes.
Okay. There are companies out there that do that sort of thing.
I think you could probably still buy VHS and DVD recorder, you know, players that are also recorders. You know, that that would be one way to do it. The other way would be to hook up a VHS player to a computer. You'd have to have, you know, an audio video card support on the back of your system to do that. And then you could record it to your DVD on your computer. So,
wouldn't be very fast.
No, you'd have to run typically. I mean, when you send them out to companies, they have specialized hardware and software to make it happen a lot faster. when you do it on your system, you're going to have to play the tape
real time,
and record it real time. You know, as far as the other media, you know, it comes down to having a player and then having an interface to the computer to pull that signal so it can be handed off to the DVD. I think with the VHS, I remember having a VHS DVD player recorder that when I wanted to record a tape, I could easily record it to the DVD. You know, that was the simplest thing because you just let it run, you know, and have to be there, monitoring it. Same thing on the computer, but tendency when you do it on the computer is you just kind of hang around and make sure it hasn't, you know, like
hiccuped,
aborted, or, you know, it needs to answer a question or something.
So there you go, Fred. I hope that helps. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
The other thing is just taking a shot at it, looking on Amazon or eBay, or even just doing a Google, you know, Yahoo, whatever search you like to use, and see if there are some specialized devices out there.
I think there are some specialized devices out there, but
I used to do a lot of multiplication of DVDs, so there is a special box that I have that will record three CDs or DVDs, you know,
at a time. Yeah, there we go. Let's turn to Keith in Plymouth. Maybe somebody else will have some ideas about that as well. Maybe somebody else has done this. So stay listening, and we'll see what else comes up. But let's go to Keith in Plymouth next. Hi, Keith.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind today?
I have an older MacBook Pro. It's about 9 years old, and I can no longer update the operating system. So I'm wondering, I'm assuming I have to replace the computer, and if I don't, what are my risks? It's very slow in loading. When you turn it off, it takes a long time to have the computer open up. There's a lot of photos on it. We're using about 220 gigabytes of the 250 that's in the memory. So I have a question about what my options are.
Well, I believe Apple gives you somewhere, depends on when you buy your computer system, in terms of the age, it's usually like a 5 to 7 year plan where they'll continue to update your operating system and then they cut you off. So, with that being said, yes, you're experiencing, you know, the fact that it's getting older in terms of, there's no longer updates available for it. There are no longer enhancements to the software that you could take advantage of. And then you're continuing to use it, so you're occupying more and more space, which starts to get in the way of the operating system functioning, you know, at optimum speed and capacity. So you probably should be looking at new hardware. And probably the easiest way for you to transition is make sure you know where all of your data files are, whether they're pictures, videos, music, and so forth, and move them off to a separate, external drive. You should be using some kind of backup drive for your Time Machine. I have yet to use Time Machine from one machine to another to restore data files, but my guess is it's probably possible. I don't know, Larry. Have you tried or worked with anyone that moved, over from an older machine to a new one with a Time Machine?
No, I haven't.
But I know when you look at your Time Machine backup on the machine that you're working with, you just click into the backup and you can see all your files there. But it would be a good idea to have a separate backup drive and move all of your data files there so you know where they, you make sure you've got all of them, and then you can transition them over to the new system. Whether it's an Apple or Windows, that's your choice. The data files, depending upon the software that you use, it should work on both systems. You should be able to access your pictures and your videos and so forth on mm-hmm. either computer.
There you go. Thanks so much. Jill, by the way, for video transfer, mm-hmm. says she uses something called EZCAP. Mm. So the letter E, the letter Z, or Dave Potratz has used it, I guess. Dave has used that. EZCAP for video transfer. So that's something for our previous caller to look into. Ron in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I got a question. I have a digital video recorder, DVD recorder. I don't know if Peter knows anything about this technology, but for a while I was able to record things on it, and it's a combo. I think it's a Samsung. It's all got a VHS tape recorder too. But so now, once in a while, after I've recorded on things on a DVD disc, play them back, and then when I want to record again, the machine will say this disc is unusable. And then when I take the disc out and look at the underside, it looks like it's been burned or something. It looks darker than it was before I first put it in or bought it new. And I was just wondering, would you know anything about these DVD technology and the recorders?
Well, it sounds to me like if you're noticing something physically different on the disc, there might be a problem with the actual, hardware that you're using it in. You shouldn't... when you write to the disc, you can look at it, blank disc, and then write to it, and you do see, that there was something written to it. It does change. But after that first change, you should not see, it darker or colored differently.
Aren't there some discs, though, DVDs, that you can't record again on that are designed not to be allowed to record?
There are some that are just record only.
Yeah.
And then there are others that if you use it with the computer system, you could set it up to be, rewritable. So mm-hmm. essentially erasing what was on it.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't physically see something different after it's been recorded
on. That's got to be the hardware.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
You never accept that an appliance and it's a computer, anything that you use that just because it's new that it's perfect. I've replaced what has been new three times because it wasn't perfect.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Ron. Appreciate it. Sean in Sparta, your turn next. Hi, Sean.
Good morning. How are things going?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Okay, I had a comment about the caller about the VHS and DVDs.
Yeah.
I used to do that a lot. In fact, I taught classes on it. Okay. The thing is, there's software out there that with hardware that will connect your VHS player to your computer. Okay. I got, my latest one I got at Walmart. Okay. Then what you do is you run the program and then take the video and makes it into a file, AVI MPG, MP4, okay? Then you can use Nero or Easy CD-ROM Creator and then burn your movie to the DVD. And this way, what you can do is, if you have storage, you can take various videos, you know, videos, burn them, and then you can organize it like a chapter, you know, like a, you know, what you see with a commercial DVD. But there are, like I said, Walmart has a program. Also, I know on Facebook, I see an advertisement for a little connector that takes the three outputs, you know, to the VHS and brings it in through a USB. And you do that, you create the file and then burn it to a DVD.
All right. So there you go. That yep. makes sense. Thank you very much, Sean. Appreciate that call.
I know some people.
Yeah, you as well.
I know some people actually will strip their movies from the DVDs and move them to a hard drive and set up a media center so yeah. that they can use, you know, that media center server as their yeah. basis of distributing the movies across their whole network.
All right, there we go. And that's I think that's what Easy Cap really is and the function that it performs. So there you go. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Well, let's turn to Dan in Madison next. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Pleasure to be on the greatest radio show in America. I have a Mac OS X Yosemite 10.105 operating system, and ever since I upgraded it, it keeps dropping the Wi-Fi connection intermittently, and it just is driving me to pickleball. I can't tell you how frustrating it is because we do so much work now on the cloud, and in the middle of a project, it drops the connection, and I have to go into network diagnosis and start all over. My cursory research on the internet says I'm not the only one having this problem, and it tends to be people who upgraded, not people who installed the operating system out of the box. I was wondering if you've ever heard of this or you could direct me in some direction where I can get it fixed before I do actually take up pickleball.
Okay.
Well, I have seen problems just like what you're talking about. In fact, my daughter had a problem, and she was very frustrated with it. She hates updates because of experiencing problems like that. I think one of her external drives was flaky, would not be recognized consistently, and a lot of work on it. Is an option available for you to update to the High Sierra?
No, I'm out of updates.
You're out of updates.
Yeah, it's a maybe 10-year-old computer now.
Yeah. Well. Mm. Yeah, you'd have to do some research to see if there is a way for you to roll it back or if there's any fix that's applied out there. You'd probably want to do some searches on some of the Mac forums that are out there to see what kind of approach you want to take to, you know, to fix that. I know I had a problem with an update and they claimed that there were like 250,000 users affected by it, but Apple did not, you know, recognize that it was a problem. So I sought help by, you know, just doing a lot of research and reading forums and, you know, seeing what fix could be applied. Sometimes it's as simple as changing a version of a file that's just embedded on your system, but you got to know what the file is and where it's located. So, you know, like you said, you're not alone. I would take that probably as a challenge for you and just try and, you know, see. You got to just keep working the searches and read the answers on the forums to find out what path it'll lead you to fix it. I had the problem with all the updates with the Avast internet security being a problem. And I had to remove it across all of my systems because it was basically running interference. And I only found that answer out not through Microsoft, but through other sources.
Yeah, there we go. No easy fix from the sound of it, Dan. Thanks for calling. You need to do a little more.
You just got to keep keep working on. I can't stress enough, when you ask a question and you're not satisfied with the answer, read all of the answers and try to figure out how to ask your question better. Yeah. You know, there's got to be a different way to phrase or find that, you know, a solution.
Good luck, Dan. Thank you. Ed in Madison, we'll go to you next. Hi, Ed.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. I'm a genealogist, and as such, over the years, I have made backups of my data because I feel it's pretty important stuff. And now I've got backups on multiple drives, on multiple machines. I use an Apple. And I'm trying to get rid of some of that space that's tied up in multiple backups. Is there a program that will show me files that are the same on different drives so that I can eliminate and get the one program and save one file to a new backup and then get rid of all the others?
What are you using for backing up?
I'm using a couple different things. One is Time Machine on my Apple.
All right.
The other is I just will physically copy directories to a new physical drive so that I have a backup on that drive. But I don't have a backup program that will pick out the one file that's the same of the 16 that have the same name.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if there's software out there that does that. That's a lot of file management. There are a backup program, you know, with Time Machine. It's giving you a backup folder, and then you just keep drilling down within each one, and it's basically taking a picture of, you know, the files that you've elected to backup. It allows you to drill down and see those. But, you know, it's just, it's a repetitive backup on, you know, a monthly basis, a weekly basis, a daily basis, and then multiple times during the day. Backup software, on the other hand, can be programmed to do the same thing, but you're trying to compare versions of backups and the contents within the versions, and that's pretty tricky because it's assuming that you wanted it backed up, so it's going to back it up. When you have a simple copy of a folder and files to a drive, then, you know, it's left to the user, you know, to examine and study what were in those folders and files.
Yeah. So you almost have to go back and look at those files.
Yeah, you have to look at date and timestamps on them and sizes. Just because a file was backed up, if the size doesn't look right, it may not be backed up properly.
Hmm. All right.
You know, just because there's a folder there does not mean that there are files in that folder.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen that.
So there you go. But he can, I mean, those are some tricks to sort of help the process.
Yeah, and the other thing is, you know, using paper and pencil, you know, and also labeling things. One of the things I learned early on in school when you in a lab environment, and that's really what you're talking about is your computers, your devices are lab components, is date and time stamping things and keeping track of them on a sheet. You can transpose that to a computer, but you know, whether or not you sit there and type it in the computer or you know, handwrite it, so at least you have a record of what you've looked at and then identify it, you know, whether or not you want to put, you know, some tape on it and mark that you've checked it and what's, you know, on it. I mean, those are good things that you should be doing.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Good luck. Thanks for calling, Ed. Appreciate it. Anne in Madison is not emailed to say she's not very computer savvy. Wonders, is it difficult to update the operating system? Would it make sense to take it to a professional person to do it? And for a 10-year-old laptop running Vista, is it likely not going to have enough memory to update the operating system?
Vista would probably... I'm not sure if Vista's still being updated because that was before Windows 8. And We're now at Windows 10. So, you know, to update it to the latest version of the operating system, it might not have enough hardware support to bring it to the latest operating system. As far as doing updates, one of the options when you get a computer is that Windows is set up to update automatically. And I think what we're talking about at the beginning of the show are these updates that are being applied to us automatically are the things that can frustrate us because they're not really updating our system. They're trying to. So is it difficult to update an operating system? The answer could be yes and no. You could have a perfect system and it will just keep updating and updating and everything works fine and you have no problems. And then there could be systems where it updates and then it fails and then it tries to update again and it fails and you're having problems with it. And then you got to figure out what kind of problems. Usually Microsoft puts out an error message so you can go out there and today better than ever, you can research that error message and see what it is. But the fix to it may not necessarily work. So that's where it starts getting difficult.
We have more callers online. Let's go to Dot in Madison next. Hi, Dot.
Hello.
Yes, hi. What can we do for you?
Well, I hope I can explain it well enough to you, but on my desktop at home, my Microsoft Windows 10, I thought I was restarting an update. It said an update was available, and I pushed the restart, and then my computer completely shut down, powered off. I'm not familiar with that, with a restart. Usually it just powers through and comes back up, but this completely shut down, powered off, and when I went to go turn the power on again, nothing comes up, and all these loud series of beeping happen. Is there any help you might give me with that?
Been through a number of these things. Sometimes, depends on the computer. Sometimes you can, you power it up, but you also hold down the Windows symbol on your keyboard. And, you know, just wait. So you hold it down and then turn it on. And just wait, and you might get a message on your screen or a series of options to try. One would be like a Windows restart or some recovery options. It could be coincidental that for whatever reason, you know, the update that was applied also, you know, seriously crashed your system. In that case, you might have to take it in and have it looked at. I usually would think it would probably be more of, you know, holding down the Windows symbol while you're turning on the computer and seeing what your options are.
That's probably the simplest. That's the best thing.
Yeah, that's probably the simplest
starting point for sure.
Yeah. The other thing is I want to point out on my website, and we've talked about this many times before, and I've posted it along with the Web Top 10 that I put up there, is how to create a Windows 10 bootable USB or DVD. There are instructions out there from multiple sites. I've put links up to them for like three of them, where in cases like this, having something, you know, available to use is a very good thing. They call it a vital tool. You know, when people write these things, they refer to them as vital tools. So something that you should have handy. And I even have mentioned to the fact that I have one in my office. It's labeled that way. And there are a couple of people that know that's what it's there for in case we have a problem like that and I'm not there, that you can put this in your computer and it will give you options to try and resuscitate a Windows 10 system that's got problems.
So there you go, Dot. Thank you so much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, my guest today, Peter Green of Infostar.com. Thanks so much for joining in. If problem with your computer or maybe with your operating system, I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments or maybe an experience to share. The number to call is 1-800-795-5225. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Speaking of emails, Gary emailed to say his iPhone frequently does not respond to touch. And it's, of course, useless when that occurs. What's up there? What could be up?
Well, did he say what version of his phone he had?
No.
You know, depending upon the age of the phone, you've got options to go back to Apple and have them, you know, run tests on it. You know, the touch screen can be replaced. So for whatever reason, there could be, you know, some issue with the connectivity of the touch screen with the phone and causing problems with that. Also is related to, you know, checking your fingertips, moisture, if they're dry.
They're too dry, they won't work.
Is a possibility. You know, unless you have a way of, you know, administering some kind of test, there might be a downloadable test or an app that tests those features to, you know, look at the integrity of your phone. So you could check the, you know, the app store for Apple and see if there's something like that that does exist. I'm sure that the Apple store, or, you know, if depends on where you're located, whether or not you have access to that, you might want to go online and see if there are ways to check to see, you know, what can you do to look at the integrity of your, you know, touchscreen on your version of your phone.
What about if, let's say, I don't know, Verizon, you're on Verizon, would you, if you went to your local Verizon store?
Yeah, I would go to local carrier, you know, that you signed up with and have it checked out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, probably the screen.
Yeah. And those can be replaced. It just depends on, you know, cost-wise, whether or not it's done, you know, through their Apple Care or, you know, what you have with your carrier. And I think there was a version of the iPhone that had issues, that Apple had some kind of recall where they were subsidizing fixing the screens. This was fairly recent, within the last year or so. So
that's worth looking into.
Yeah,
for
it's
sure.
Definitely worth looking into.
Kirsten in Milwaukee, it's your turn now. Hi, Kirsten.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call.
Okay, so I just got a new laptop. It's like a Yoda or something, a Yoga. And she asked me to change my operating system, and I did it through my phone, my Samsung Android phone. And before I used Google, I had my Google Maps, my Google Bar, and everything on my phone, and it switched everything over on my phone. I think maybe to Bing. I don't know what it is. And I want it all back on my phone, and I don't know how to do that.
So you mean on your phone it's changed?
It changed on my phone because I think I did it through my phone. Like it asked me, you know, through my email or something to load it onto my new laptop through my phone, and it switched everything over. So all my little buttons, all my apps went back into my, you know, were erased off of my phone. And not erased. They just put it back into the App Store, and I had to just put them all back onto my home screen.
Then
my Google Bar.
Was it a Microsoft program that you tried to update?
Well, I put in their Office thing, the thing that you buy like from Best Buy.
Yeah.
But this was just the operating system for the computer, and I feel like since I did it through, like, I think it's running on Bing now. Is Bing something?
Yeah, I think what they did was they try to sync up your phone with the Microsoft software, and there's, what kind of phone do you have?
Just a Samsung Note Android.
Yeah. I played with their, I forgot what it's called, but it was a Microsoft application of, to make my phone more Microsoft-like, and it was a bad mistake.
So what'd you do to fix it?
Uninstalled it. So there's probably an app on your phone. You're going to have to go looking for it. I don't even remember what they called it. I was like, God, this is a nightmare. Why did I do that? I found it and uninstalled it, and, you know, then all Google things came back, because that's what, you know, that's their operating system is Android. So what Bing is a Microsoft website and search engine like Google. And what's happened is the app that was downloaded and installed on your phone try to make you one with Microsoft. So you need to uninstall it. It's probably in your app.
What would it look like, or what would it say? Would it say?
I forgot what it's called, but it's like micro. It's a Microsoft, and then there's. I don't know if it's like not. It's not Sync, but it's another application that they gave it a name. But I believe if you uninstall it, it will
take care of it.
Put everything back to your Google defaults.
And Kirsten, you may be able to just figure that out by looking at.
Yeah, if you can't find it, email the studio, Larry, and then they'll forward the message on to me, and then I could steer you in the right direction.
Okay, that makes good sense. Thank you very much.
Been there. Unfortunately, didn't want to go there.
There you go. Oh, man. Let's go to Mary in Milwaukee.
Hello, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, I have a question about cookies. We're operating with Google Chrome, and we are having trouble trying to locate where the cookies are located and how to delete them. And if we delete all of the cookies that are on our system, what else will it delete?
Well, it's a great question. So I thought you were talking about chocolate chip or chocolate mint chip cookies. But so cookies are used to, I guess the term I would say is to make your experience online easier and more tuned into how you do your web searches. So there are a lot of advertising companies that will use the cookies to give you information as related to the products that you might be searching for or interested in. And also when you are logging into some of the sites that, you know, you do banking and so forth, you know, they use cookies to just say, hey, you're back, and, you know, I kind of know who you are and want to help you out. It's a good idea to occasionally clean those up. They do accumulate. You can use utility programs like CCleaner is a popular one. Glary Utilities, another one. There are other utilities out there that will clean up the cookies. To find them, you could go into the Chrome, and I think it's under usually options or preferences, and you have to search for where the, you know, the cookies are located. On your Windows system, it's based on your user folder and your documents and app data. So what I would recommend you doing is just searching on the term app data, APPDATA, and doing a search on how do I access my app data folder on my computer, because it's a hidden folder, and you know, with that goes a little bit of risk in trying to access it and do things to it. Yeah. So usually you access it through the application, so it would be Google Chrome, Safari, Internet Explorer, Edge, Firefox. They all have ways to accessing it. Or you could use a utility cleaner and, you know, just specify that you want your cookies wiped out, and it'll, you know, take care of it.
All right. There we go. Thank you for calling. On to, let's see, Judy in Madison. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
My question has to do with Apple. I am running the current I see a program 10.13.6, so that's all up to date. But this is an ongoing problem that I have with my contact list, my contact application, and I don't know how to undo it or how to deal with it. I end up getting multiples of things, multiple listings of people that I've put in, both on the computer and on my iPhone, and it seems to happen after I connect my iPhone to, so that I can sync the two together. Does that always happen? And is there a way that I can get rid of it, a way that I can prevent it? And also, is there a way that I can make a hard copy of all of my files that are in that contact list in case I lose them so that I can easily put them back in again? Lots of questions there.
Yeah. I don't know if we can answer them before we have to take a break, but one of the things is you might want to check and do some searching on the contact program that you're using and see whether or not there are issues with it as related to the version of the OS that you're using.
And we'll stay listening, Judy, because we are going to take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll come back and try and address everything that you brought up here. Peter Green, our guest today of Infostar.com. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back with Pete right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mehler here with my guest, Peter Green of Infostar.com, as we talk computers with him and all kinds of issues. Join in, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And before we broke for news, Judy in Madison has an issue where she winds up with multiple listings, I don't think all the time, but a lot, sometimes on her contact list. And can she wants to know maybe how you can get rid of that. And also, can she make a hard copy of all the names that are in her contact list?
Well, I know the data files are accessible both on your desktop and the phone. With the phone, you'd have to export that file out to the PC, so whether it's an Apple or Windows or whatever, you'd have to export that file. Typically, they're usually text-based files when they export them out, so they're easily readable by just a simple, editor. On the desktop side, to look at those contacts, you probably have to locate the file and then click on it and see how your computer responds to opening it up. Now, as far as, making changes to it, if you eliminate the duplicates, what caused the duplicates? If you eliminate them and then they come back, is it, what's glitching? So a couple of things come to mind. One is to check and see if the syncing program that you're using in your phone does it need updating, or are there known issues with it? The other issue with syncing is there a problem with the interface that you're using? Maybe there's a cable problem and it's glitching on that and thinking it needs to do it again and again. So not quite sure what's causing the duplicates. So before you go removing duplicates, I would try and research what causes the duplicates and then remove them.
Yeah. All right.
I think that's the safest approach.
And you've got some ideas for your top 10 list.
Yeah.
Too,
and then, in terms
to
of
go along with that.
Yeah. In terms of utility software, there's software companies out there that make programs, apps that allow you to virtually any file on your phone to migrate it over to a PC or another device for you to work with. So we'll start with the top 10, and that's one of the last ones. So if you go to Infostar.com, on the top left side is either the current top 10 or the top 10 archives where you have to scroll to today's date. So the first one is called littlefreelibrary.org, and I have a lot of ORGs this month. So littlefreelibrary.org, they're actually based in Hudson, Wisconsin, and it's a worldwide movement for putting out free libraries for, you know, getting kids engaged in reading, and it's a great program. Number two, I mentioned the .com version of this, but the whatismyip.org site has a lot more resources for providing what is your IP address and many other useful tools for navigating the online world and also your website. Number three, talk about evolution. Insectidentification.org is a free resource that has over a million insects and bugs to check out online. So if you're curious, you know, about that, it's pretty cool. Number four is called avoidspoilers.com, and it's a resource to help you find information on upcoming live or replay sports or TV events. And there's a lot up there. And they also, if you're interested in seat tickets for those events, it's pretty neat how they've figured out how to link up to all those. Number five, and I recently used this for a Brewers game. I don't know if you've had the chance to use it, but I use StubHub to purchase tickets online. And
I have.
You walk right up there. You scan them off your phone. It works great. Number six, govx.com, govx.com, gives exclusive access to discounted deals on gear, apparel, tickets, travel, and more for current and former military and first responders and law enforcement personnel. I have no idea if it's good, but I'm just putting it out there. And if someone says, hey, this really works well, that's great. Number seven is called centerwatch.com, and it's been up since 1994. It's a trusted resource and global destination for clinical trial information for both professionals and patients. Number eight is safecosmetics.org, and it's a campaign for safe cosmetics to protect the health of consumers and workers in the environment that just deal with cosmetics. And part of that is also bcpp.org, which is the Breast Cancer Prevention Partners. It's a science-based advocacy organization, works to prevent breast cancer by eliminating exposure to toxic chemicals and radiation. And number 10 is called Syncios, syncios.com. They claim to have over 100 million users of their products. They're based, if I pronounce this correctly, Shenzhen, China, but they've created apps that work with all of our mobile devices and allow you to manage virtually any file that's on those systems. So whether it's Android, iPhone, tablet, and so forth. And I downloaded one of their applications and was amazed at how easy it was to use and what I had access to on my phone.
And that's all up on your Infostar.com website.
Oh. And along with creating that recovery disk that I talked about earlier. So if you have a Windows 10 system, I would recommend you having one of those handy.
Grant emailed to say he uses a great app called Cookie that automatically removes cookies for privacy. It works with all major browsers. He set up to remove cookies every minute and allows you to create a favorites list that will not remove chosen important cookies if you desire.
Oh, that's great.
And the app is called Cookie. So there you go. Let's take some calls here. Mark in Scandinavia. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've got a PC, a Toshiba satellite, about 5 years old, and the touchpad keeps getting touchier and touchier. It's got a quick scroll feature where you scroll down on the far right and it moves things up and down quickly. The problem is it keeps migrating to the left where I have to go to the far left to even do normal scrolling where it doesn't jump around. Is that because my touchpad is dirty? Is it defective? Or I don't know what to do about it. It's been doing that for about 3 years.
Hmm. Yeah, I would probably, you know, you can do some external cleaning on it, excuse me, external cleaning, but I would probably, I'm sure there's probably a YouTube video out there some kind of documentation on how to, you know, get your keyboard off of your laptop and deal with that and see if there's a fix to it. Maybe it's an update fix because you said it's been going on for 3 years. That's the approach I would take.
All right.
But I would definitely look and see if there's a YouTube video out there that shows you how to, you know, take it apart, you know, for cleaning purposes. But check first and see if that's something that is fixable by cleaning. Sometimes those things are not. They're all solid state, and it's just something that, you know, needs to be replaced. And it might be something you could order off of Amazon or eBay to, you know, replace that part of your, you know, your laptop.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Joel in Lansing, Iowa, your turn. Thank you for waiting. What's on your mind? Joel, are you there? No, maybe we lost Joel. Let's try Arlene in Jackson. Hi, Arlene.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Every time I turn on my computer, I get a rectangular box in the middle that says configuration system failed to initialize. Another instance is running.
What kind of computer is it? Is it a Windows, an Apple?
Yeah, I have Windows 10.
Windows 10. So it's a... does it come up to a desktop, or is this just like on a blank screen and it puts a square in a rectangle?
No, it comes up with whatever I have, but, you know, click on, but it just comes up with that little in the middle, just a little
box.
Rectangular box in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And it will not. Also, it does not let me update. It says updates failed.
Okay. So it's saying Windows updates failed?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that I've had to work on fixing, and it's what you have to do is download a Windows. What I've done to fix the problems that I've had with systems is you download the Windows 10 18.03 build, and it is a file that you can burn to either a USB or a DVD. And you download that file, and then what you do is you reboot your computer, and you apply that update, and you don't want any other updates, just that update. And it'll ask you, do you want to also grab other updates, and you don't. And you just want to get to that 18.03. I'm going to make an assumption that you're having a problem getting to that because that's a very common occurrence, and I've seen it on a number of systems, and it could be very frustrating, and it could also be the cause of that configuration failure as well.
All right. You got that?
I got that. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Arlene. And
this update may take...
Take some time.
It may take anywhere from a half hour to 4 hours.
Oh.
Depends on the computer.
I've seen
it on either a half hour on a real fast one, and I've seen it take 4 hours on a real slow one.
Oh.
Yeah. And before you do it, of course, make backups of your data. Make sure that, you know, you should always be making sure you got backups of your data.
There you go, Arlene. Thank you. And Cameron in Lake Geneva, your turn. Hi.
Hello. I'm actually I'm calling about the first comment that was made about the duplicate names on that person's cell phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just thought I'd help because it happened to me. And what happened is your cell phone carrier can actually it'll save to the cell carrier that you have. The number will save to theirs, and then also save to your phone. So that's I'm 90% sure that's what's happening. That person is that their cell carrier is saving that number when they save someone's number on their phone, and then also saving on their phone. So what I did, I just went with it, because I thought if I lost my phone, then at least my cell carrier has all my contacts, and you know they'll be able to just update all my contacts on my cell phone. Mm-hmm. And then I thought if I switch cell carriers, well then at least I got all the contacts still on my phone. So I just left it as the duplicate names and stuff like that. So I just wanted to give a call in response to that person's question because right. that happened to me.
All so right. What kind of phone are you using? Are you using an iPhone?
For that one, I got a new phone now, but that I was on T-Mobile and I was using a Samsung Galaxy S3 at the time mm-hmm. is when that happened to me.
All right. Thanks a lot,
yep,
Cameron.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, that's a good point that, you know, the carriers also have their backup facility as well. So you can do it yourself and you also, and then Apple has iCloud and, you know, their backups that way as well.
Let's go to Judy in Madison. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Good. I wondered if Peter had any information about, we keep getting these notices on our email about Yahoo and AOL, and they've joined Oath, and that's all part now of Verizon, and we got all these terms of service, and they talk about charges that they might make, and we're supposed to agree to all this. Are you familiar with this at all?
All the mergers that are going on here.
Yeah.
I have not seen any of those notifications.
I haven't either.
I also know there was some law change, and I think it was in the last 60 days, and there were a lot of re-notifications coming out about privacy statements and all that. So I guess what's your concern with what they're sending out?
Well, they talk about in there, well, of course, all the privacy things and then using the services and that you might get charges and auto renewals and all that type of thing. But it doesn't really doesn't explain, you know, whether we're going to get billed for this in your account. It's just so much information. And I guess the biggest concern is the charges that they might make.
Mm-hmm.
From Oath, as they call it, I guess would be in addition to our ATTU verse bill. I don't know. I just thought maybe you had heard of some of this and knew what was going on and whether we should agree to it. I guess if we don't, we just...
Most of the time you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like I said... Okay. There were some recent, you know, mergers one thing, but there were some recent law changes, I believe, in the last 60 days where they had to re-up their privacy notices and things like that. What I would do is, you know, number one is if you've signed up for a service and it's got an auto renewal, you know, maybe you want to turn that off because, you know, when it comes up for renewal, you know, you might want to question, do you want to renew it? Otherwise, you got to go through the hassle of backing it out and contacting somebody and trying to get a refund and so forth.
How do you do that?
It's usually in a preferences setting. So any of the online services, and social media, the ones that charge for things, LinkedIn is one that charges for one. So if you like to try their professional level of a service and you get 30 days, they're going to put on the auto-renew, so every 30 days you're going to get billed. But, you know, if you go into preferences, you'll find it and you can turn it off. So if there are areas where you read and it says they're going to might charge you for something, is nowhere, you know, where that is in your system. So you can either, you know, pay attention to it or, you know, check in on your account to see where there might be an account balance, you know, and say, why did I get this charge? I've also found that when you talk to or contact the companies, if you have a charge, they'll work with you and back those out. They'll reverse them. But I wouldn't wait for 6 months or, you know, 9 months. I'd be proactive and do it within the first 30 to 60 days.
There you go. Thanks, Judy. Appreciate the call. And we'll take some more callers here. Steve in Rome, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a ton of music on my HP computer in the Windows Media Player file, and I would like to download those to my LG phone that I got from Cricket. And in fact, I have cabled from the phone to the computer, attached a cable, and actually downloaded music onto the phone. And when I was finished, there was nothing on the phone. None of the music files were on the phone. I'm just not sure what to do.
That's interesting, because, you know, if you're transferring files, are you sure that the player on the phone recognizes the I believe it's probably an MP4?
I'm not really sure of that. No, yeah. I don't even know how to determine that.
Yeah, I think that might be the problem, is the files might be there, but they're just not recognized by your player on your phone. So, you know, even though you've identified them on your computer and you've transferred them over, if you don't have software that actually recognizes that file format to play it, you won't be able to play it.
Now, how do you figure that out?
There are apps that will allow you to play those files on your phone. You just have to, you know, find them in the App Store. Look at the extension that's on the file on your computer. And then I would probably just do a little research, you know, to see what player you need, you know, for your phone. I know I've downloaded an app on my Android to play some audiobooks that, you know, it wouldn't play otherwise.
Oh, all right.
So the files were there, but it wouldn't play it unless I had the player to play it.
Does that help out, Steve?
Go on the internet to find that extension app?
Yeah, you could either do that or just search in your Play Store or Apple Store. You know, you know, if it's an Android, just go to your Google Play Store and do a search for the app. Or if you want to know more, there are websites like CNET.com that have a lot of good information about that stuff.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling.
It'll feel good once they start playing.
Kirk and Baraboo, your turn. Hi, Kirk.
Hi. Yeah, question is, I know that Kaspersky Lab security was all the rage for government, civilian, everything up until about a year ago. And then it became the bane of every IT department's existence when it was revealed that the Russian government was using it because they had funded it to get whatever they wanted out of any computer. Now, on your number 10 pick, you have a software system from Shenzhen, which is the epicenter of everything Chinese computer.
Yeah.
How do you filter your software?
You got about 15 seconds.
Yeah, I knew. I had a feeling if that was going to come up. I just, you know, I looked at the app in terms of functionality. I didn't look at it where it originated from. So, you know, I guess base your decision, you know, on usability and functionality. Kaspersky, you know, being Russian-based doesn't necessarily mean it's bad.
No. There, and on that note, we have to close. Peter, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it very much. He's back on October 1st. We'll do this again. Tomorrow we'll take a look at the importance of vacations and talk about ways to make sure everyone in the trip gets along. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.